Welcome to Tech in the Right Direction, the podcast. This week, I'll be speaking with Danica Bunnett. As Bluon's Chief Operating Officer, Danica manages the day-to-day operations of Bluon, a rapidly growing technology company in the HVAC space that has grown from 30 people to 130 in just over a year. As is typical in a company of Bluon's size, Danica directly oversees several critical teams while working hand in glove with managers on several others. Danica is a true hands-on manager and player coach who utilizes her unique skill set to manage a diverse group of technicians, professionals, and software engineers with equal skill, grace, and authority. Danica has been with Bluon from the virtual beginning and has been instrumental in its growth as well as its one-of-a-kind culture. In many ways, Bluon is a direct reflection of Danica and her unworldly work ethic, unmatched enthusiasm, seemingly always positive attitude, and direct style of communication. She is a graduate of Stanford University with a bachelor's in product design mechanical engineering. She was also the co-president of Stanford Women in Design, SWID, and believes in bridging Silicon Valley's high technology innovation with the HVAC world. Welcome to the show, Danica. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm excited.
Great. Let's get started. So, Danica, as a woman in tech, can you share with us your career journey and how you got to where you are today?
Sure, no problem. I studied product design at Stanford, which was under the School of Mechanical Engineering. And my junior year, just like every, you know, college kid, was looking for an internship. And I had just recently taken a career in thermodynamics and was just absolutely sort of fell in love with the subject and the concept of it. And so I was looking for some sort of an internship along those lines. And through various connections, I heard of this company, Bluon. And at the time, we were manufacturing a replacement, an environmentally friendly replacement for R22 or Freon refrigerant. And I thought, wow, that is super interesting. I want to get involved there. And, did an internship my junior year and never left. And so I've been now with the company since 2017 and really experienced sort of this incredible evolution. We started as a physical refrigerant product, but I've grown into an app and a web-based platform, and I can walk through sort of that journey. But when I first started, we were less than 10 of us, I think 6 of us at the time, in Sacramento out of a warehouse. And now we're right about 150 people, and have developers and technicians and designers and just a really amazing team. And watching that growth over the last few years has just been a really, really incredible experience.
That's great. Wow. Your family always encouraged you to build and repair things with your hands at a very, very young age. Tell us what that was like.
Right. So, I think I had a really interesting childhood. My family really placed a lot of value on experiences that weren't in the learning experiences that weren't in a traditional classroom sort of setting. And I'm extremely, extremely grateful for that. I don't think I quite realized the value of that as a child. But what that sort of entailed was anytime we were fixing something, my family was super handy and we did a lot of work on our house and fixing boats and dirt bikes and, solar system, solar panels and that sort of thing. I was always participating in that with my family. And so what that allowed me to do is sort of build a framework for how things work in the world and kind of get a mechanical intuition, which in college, I think the value of that was really high just because it gave me a way to think about the physical mechanical world in a way that was practical, right? Which I could then tie the math and the science behind, but I could think about it practically. And I think that really encouraged me to have confidence in those subjects. I didn't go into Stanford thinking I was going to be in the engineering field, I thought, you know, maybe I was going to be a doctor or something else. But what I realized was the experiences that I had growing up really sort of created that pathway for me to excel within that lane. I just hadn't quite realized it at the time.
I love that. I love that your family really wanted you to have experiences. I think that's where you really learn and you learn to implement things. Plus, when you said, you know, when you started with Bluon, it was a different experience. And now you've grown so much and automated so much. And automation comes from really understanding the foundation physically without the automation. And then you can build a true automated product. Would you agree?
Absolutely. But I think so. The really interesting thing about Bluon is we completely pivoted, which was really an interesting sort of thought challenge over the last few years. So one of the things that we did, we had this refrigerant product and we realized that these technicians that were, you know, controlling all this HVAC infrastructure in the U.S. were just undersupported and didn't have a lot of tools and resources. And in rolling out the product, we realized this. It was sort of our big aha moment. And we started creating tools that would help with the refrigerant product adoption. We started rolling out these software-based tools to help in that. And all of a sudden, we woke up one day and the software product itself, separate from the refrigerant, just started taking off. People were downloading it to use those resources. And we had the ability to sort of take a pause and a step back there for a second and say, okay, what are we building here that holds the value and how do we lean more into that? And so we said, you know, let's really start bolstering those support resources that we're providing to technicians and play that up a little bit and see what happens. And it just took off. So within a few years, we went from having, you know, a few hundred technicians on our platform to we're about 140,000 now, which is 45% of the market. And the reason is these technicians, you know, on their day-to-day job, just don't have the information that they need to be successful, right? So they show up to a piece of equipment for the first time, and there's no manual associated with that at the unit, but they need the wiring diagram and they need the manual to be able to understand how to repair that piece of equipment or what parts to buy. And so we started cataloging all those manuals, as well as we actually acquired a company of a database that had all the part information for a particular unit. So one thing that really blows people's minds is, you know, a technician working on a piece of equipment doesn't know what parts are required to fix that unit. They might know they need a compressor, right? Because maybe they blew the compressor, whatever might be wrong with it, but they don't know specifically which one. Mm-hmm. And that really an insightful sort of realization, because without knowing the specific one, they rely on their local brick and mortar distributor to provide that information for them. But there's so much that can go wrong in that process of trying to understand which part they actually need, right? They might not have the part number because it's scratched off the actual part because it's been in the unit for 20 years, or they might misspeak and the supplier thinks they, you know, need a different part and they get the wrong part. And so there's a lot of pain and headache between that whole sort of workflow and that whole process. And so we were close enough to it to realize that and started building this platform to where technicians and distributors can interact and pass information between one another to create quote requests and then actually orders from the technician requesting them from the platform. So it's been really exciting because, you know, we sort of operate two separate businesses. We have the refrigerant product, which we still very much love and, you know, pour a lot of energy into, but also we have this amazing platform, which about 95% of our business efforts goes to at this point. And it's been really exciting to watch that take off. And so back to your question in terms of automation, you know, I think it's been really interesting to build something physical and deal with, you know, the supply chain logistics and, you know, shipping and actually creating and quality checking a physical product versus now we're doing all of that in the digital space. And so hiring the right people who have that expertise and had that experience so we could seamlessly sort of make that pivot has been sort of the biggest, I think, benefits and learnings we've had over the course of the last few years.
That's great. So is that portal on a mobile app as well?
That's correct. So we have a mobile app where these technicians get all of their information. And they can actually place quote requests with the specific part information, which hasn't been able to be done in the past, and then send that to their local distributor of what they're requesting. So they have an actual relationship with their existing distributor. We're just helping facilitate the information transfer. Mm-hmm. So it makes it easier for the technician to get what they actually need.
No, that's great. So do you think, since you're putting 95% of your energies into this software product, will you start to create like a software as a service platform for other vendors like you?
You know, so we're actually not a SaaS model. When we thought about how do we roll out this platform, right, and monetize it, because there's obviously something here that's of major value when 40% of the market's on it, right? We thought about a SaaS play. And the challenge with that is, you know, the industry as a whole, in terms of technicians and contractors, are incredibly like fragmented. And what I mean by that is 60% of contractors are only 1 to 4 individuals working for that contractor. So selling the product to a contractor, we would need, you know, hundreds of people on a sales team to be able to be able to do that. You're making very small sales and you'd have to fight for them. However, if we provide the information for free to the technician and we actually facilitate that ordering of that part and the goods that they need, we can actually take a clip from the distributor because they are very much participating in an efficiency gain for their team and their counter staff. And so it allows us to provide these resources up front to the technician without charging them. And we can actually make, you know, revenue on the backside with the distributor.
Nice. I like that a lot. So, you know, confidence is a big piece in a woman's career. And the more confidence you have, the better you grow, the better your career takes, you know, heights. And you mentioned that your experiences as a child really helped that confidence. And so why is it so important for us to get more women involved in traditionally male-dominated STEM industries?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one that's incredibly important. We have so many complex challenges as a society right now to solve. I think encouraging more women to get involved in STEM and male-dominated fields brings different perspectives to the table that, you know, historically haven't been there. And when you're innovating, throwing new ideas at it or solving the or approaching the problem in a slightly different way can spark so much different thought processes and creativity there. And I think not having more women at the table prevents that perspective and really prevents that innovation that we so desperately need.
I agree. That's, you know, women bring a whole skill set that is different from the male thought process. And so it only adding that diversity to a business in these industries is critical, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Completely. And I think gaining that confidence, you mentioned that earlier, I think that really comes along with being comfortable in who you are. So I think starting out in my career, I was maybe self-conscious about being the only female in the room at times. And that thought is really toxic because it's essentially taking up brain space that you don't need to have occupied, right? And it's kind of nagging at you in the back of your head. And I think when I really saw a shift in my career and my confidence was when I just decided, you know, stop thinking about you being different and play into that, right? What skill sets and what advantages do you have as a woman that you can utilize, right, to provide a different perspective and create that value? And shutting down that little nagging thought in the back of my head, I think was one of the hardest things to do, but really one of the things that propelled my career forward and sort of made us a great space for everybody on the team to sort of thrive, right? Because without that confidence, I mean, it's really tough to be able to speak up in meetings, to be able to, you know, throw out a crazy, almost impossible idea, but one that maybe has a little nugget of merit in there somewhere. It makes it so much harder to operate if half of your mind is occupied by, you know, a destructive thought.
That is so glad. I'm so glad you said that. And that is so true, because we need to really train ourselves, and it's not easy, but we have to train ourselves to avoid that negative thinking in our mind. You know, I call that voice a negative Nancy always. Right. But it's true. That I'm so glad you shared that thought. And once you got rid of that thought, things started to really work in favor of your confidence, which is great.
Right. And how can you lead as an individual if you're pretending?
Right.
For me, that's so hard. I mean, I can't imagine pretending or trying to put on an act or, you know, a face when I'm not being genuine to myself. People see right through that. And I think one of the things I've learned and really practiced over the last few years as we've grown the team in such a big way is being genuine. If you're genuine and you're open and you're transparent and you're honest, that makes a whole world of difference. And people really respect that, because unfortunately, you know, so many workplaces don't have that, right? And they're used to being sort of, you know, living in a world that's not transparent and confusing and full of structure and hierarchy and red tape and that sort of thing. And so if we can just be a little bit more transparent, a little bit more genuine, I think that trust factor really cements itself and allows a team to thrive in ways that, you know, are not expected. I mean, we have the most amazing team. They create amazing products, really innovative ideas, work their butts off. I mean, it's truly incredible.
That's great. That's great. And you're so right. It is so, so important to just have a culture in your organization of authenticity. I mean, when you say be genuine, be transparent, authenticity is so important. I love Brené Brown, and she talks so much about being vulnerable and being authentic. And, you know, it is something really, really to keep in mind.
100%. Yeah. And how can you expect people to trust you as a leader? Our CEO, Peter, and I, that's one of the biggest things that we always mention. It's, you know, on our wall, all of our values. And one of them is sort of that trust factor, right? And there's no hierarchy when it comes to a good idea. And that's something we plastered up there. And the reason being is, like, we all have this trust in one another that, you know, to like lean on one another to come up with that good idea, or to hear somebody out when it might be, you know, a complete moonshot, crazy idea that could never be executed on, but maybe it spurs something for somebody else. And so when you create that environment for those ideas to flow, then it's a perfect kind of like breeding ground for innovation. And that's what we've really tried to lean into, but it all starts at that trust place. And so if we can't be genuine, both Peter and I leading the team, then how can we expect anybody to have the confidence to speak up and to trust one another and to trust us to hear out their ideas? So it all sort of starts from leading by example, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That is so great. Now, your experiences as a female executive, is there anything that stands out that makes you who you are today?
When I first started leading the team, I mean, we sort of grew incredibly quickly. You know, we have all different perspectives and dynamics on the team. It's really interesting. We have technicians that, you know, have been in the field and are the most amazing people. But, you know, that's primarily a male-dominated industry, right? We also have software developers, and they speak a completely different language, right? They speak in ones and zeros, and those two groups together, the technician plus the technology, it's an interesting dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. And so as a female, I actually think a lot more about translating those two languages to communicate with one another versus it being sort of a male or female thing in my mind. However, that translation of explaining, you know, a technician focused idea to a developer or to a marketing team, that shift of how is this going to resonate to that other group so that they can understand it and execute on it, I think plays really well with how do I communicate as a female to my male counterparts in a way that they understand too. Thinking about and being strategic about how do you best communicate to people in a way that they're going to understand. And so practicing that between very different groups, right? Whether that's being a male or a female or a technician or on the marketing team or a developer, I think is just a constant muscle you have to build. And the more that you flex that, the better you get at communicating with all those different groups.
Yeah, that's so true. That's a whole different learning experience, that the communication has to be done in a format that everybody understands it, which is, you know, not always easy because now everybody's speaking different languages. And yes. So, yeah, so that's really great. I love that. Right. So you've really done an amazing job in growing the company from 30 to 150, you said, in just over a year. What do you attribute that success to? I'm sure it's many of the things we've talked about, but is there any one thing that stands out?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind, you know, we have an extreme bias towards action. And what I mean by that is we churn out a lot of ideas. We're not afraid to throw something out there and see what the reaction to the in the market is on that idea. And that's incredibly valuable because a lot of, you know, big companies, they're slow moving and they spend a year developing an idea and then 6 months testing it and then tweaking it. And so by the time they get anything to the actual market, you know, the idea is no longer sometimes relevant and is so far off of what the actual user needs that the product itself sort of flops. And what we've gotten really good at is being okay with just throwing out ideas and trying to get as much feedback as possible. Mm-hmm. We have our sales team who is absolutely incredible at, you know, they communicate with hundreds and thousands of people literally a week. Our member experience team, which is sort of our customer service, you know, support crew, they're gathering all of this feedback. And so we have this like research team that's able to extract little nuggets of insight on how the market reacts to our product and how our users enjoy it or don't enjoy it. And then we take that feedback and really quickly churn that out into the product. And so then they see their ideas becoming realized very quickly, I think is sort of the whole ballgame of why we've been able to innovate so quickly, is because we're not afraid to throw not a 100% perfect product out there. We're able to really test it and to get interactions with it so that we can make the right decisions to make it perfect. Does that make sense?
I love that. Yeah, I love that. So, you know, you can get analysis paralysis and just keep testing and keep thinking, oh, I'm going to improve it before I release it. And really, the true proof of the pudding is when you put it out there and your end users are using it. So that is amazing. And I love that you're action based, you know, you want to execute, and that is really important. And I love that all the ideas are free flowing, good, bad, other, there's no judgment, just bring them out, you know, because you never know which one's going to stick. So I love that too. That definitely speaks a lot to your leadership as well. Now, that kind of relates right into culture. So what is the culture at BlueOn? And I understand it's unique. So can you share a little bit more?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this is another reason for why we've been able to grow so quickly, is we have a very strong culture. So we actually have these values printed out in our office. And they're in our conference room. Everybody looks at them all day, every day. And they're not just some, you know, like corporate, this is what we believe in, but people really embrace them. You know, a few that stick out to me as being really big, gratitude. We practice that as a company as a whole every day. We're asking the team to pull off some really tough stuff. This is not easy, right? They're not working 9-to-5 jobs and putting it away for the day and checking out and coming back in the morning. You know, it's a lot of work being done. And it's not always easy. So having that gratitude for your teammate, for your coworker, really is sort of the foundation and the thing that holds all of it together. Because if you get snippy occasionally or you get frustrated, if you come back to that place of gratitude of I'm really thankful for my teammate for pointing out this flaw in what I was thinking about. Mm-hmm. While that was frustrating in the moment, if you can have that sense of gratitude for that actual action, then it makes all that sort of frustration dissipate. Mm-hmm. Really encourage a team to practice that. The other thing, and I mentioned this earlier, is there's no hierarchy when it comes to good ideas. That is so foundational. It's tough to even describe. I mean, most of the ideas that we get actually come from fresh perspectives, meaning a member of one team takes a look at what a different team's working on and says, huh, why are we doing it that way? Have we thought about doing XYZ? And while that idea itself might not be the thing we end up with, it sparked a line of thought that forced mm-hmm. us to go down a rabbit hole we weren't looking at, right? Mm-hmm. Or we were. For example, you know, we just hired a technician on our HVAC tech on our team, and we were rolling out a new version of the app soon, and we realized, and he actually pointed out, you know, it'd be a lot better if we just flipped this and did it differently. And we actually ended up pausing things and redesigned that portion based off of his feedback. And he was on the job for 2 weeks at that point. Mm-hmm. But I think having that openness allows people to call out blind spots. And when you're moving so quickly, which we are, you know, there's going to be stuff that slips through the cracks or we mm-hmm. don't see. And so if you create that environment where that's encouraged, then nobody feels uncomfortable to speak up or maybe, you know, self-conscious about that or, you know, don't want to bring something negative to the table. In fact, we actually celebrate that. So
that's great.
A secret to the culture.
That's great. How do they share their ideas? Is it through a suggestion box? They are vocal about it. How do they share them as they come up?
You know, it's really sort of real time. We have a lot of meetings, but we love interacting with the team, both Peter and myself. So, you know, we're not just being reported to. We are very much in the weeds with the team brainstorming things out. So we have, I mean, probably 3 or 4 sort of brainstorm free-flowing meetings a day. And those typically involve a whiteboard and a topic, and we just see what happens.
That's and great.
So, right. And I think that's really important, is creating that environment where that's encouraged versus a presentation style mode where here's the data we're reporting on, you know, here's our PowerPoint, let's go through it. It's a different environment. And so that being able to communicate those ideas when it's more of a brainstorm, I think is a bit easier. And we very much create that space for those ideas to come out.
That is great. I love that. And, you know, you are an amazing leader and you have such a hands-on approach. Share some tips, and you just did for one, you have 3 to 4 brainstorm meetings a day. That's a lot of time that you have to put into that, but because you believe in it, it's worth it. So what are some of the tips that you ensure to use that gives you that feeling that your team is growing and thriving?
That's a great question. I think one of the biggest things is just leveling with people and having open and transparent conversations with everybody on the team. Mm-hmm. We're incredibly transparent, and I keep coming back to that word because we definitely like to communicate in a way that everybody sort of knows what's going on and what our main North Star is, because we do pivot a lot and we do mm-hmm. Evolve because of that feedback that I mentioned earlier. And I think not being afraid of that transparency is huge. I think it can be easy as the team grows to want to like create silos of information mm-hmm. and to sort of shut down communication. But I think what that inadvertently does is shut down linkages between various teams and stops that innovative spirit. Even though it can be easier at times to not share too much with the team, I think hurts you in the long run. And so we really, really focus that as being a big thing. The other thing is, you know, we have so many people here with different perspectives. And so encouraging that cross-team collaboration because of those different backgrounds, I think has been really beneficial. And I'd encourage anybody to do that. I mean, we have meetings all the time with both developers and technicians sitting in the same room, hashing details out together of what, you know, people in the field would want to see versus what we can actually build. I think in a traditional structure, right, the technicians would bring up some ideas that would get passed along. Development would then, you know, spit out a few ideas, but it would be a little bit different, and then send it back to the techs, where, you know, that ping pong process, I think, is really slow. And I think you start to kind of inch away from the core idea at hand. And I think putting everybody in the same place and just hashing it out with the different backgrounds, I think is really beneficial.
I completely agree. With my teams, you know, the cross-team collaboration is so critical between operations and sales, because a lot of times sales is promising something that operations has to deliver and they don't know anything about
it.
Right. So putting them into a room and making sure that they all are on the same page made such a difference in my organization as well. And the transparency is definitely something everybody should do, because it makes people feel like they're part of something bigger. You know, that they're not just a number within the organization.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because purpose is a really big deal and it's really central. That's another thing that we have printed on our wall, is we all are invested in making the world a better place for the industry, for the environment, whatever it might be. We need to be rooted in that mission that's bigger than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us being service to other people, honestly, that's one of the things that we weed out in the interview process, is making sure that people are service to others versus service to self. You know, we can teach skills, we can teach how to actually, you know, execute on a specific role, but without that foundation of service to others versus service to self, it becomes really hard to communicate with that individual and can be really toxic. And so that's one thing that we screen for and actually kind of hold as our core like principle during the hiring process. But it allows for that communication and that cross-team collaboration to thrive, like you were describing.
Yeah, no, that's so true. The service to others is that humility and that servant leadership that, you know, we have to all practice every day. It doesn't matter what level you're at. I always listen to everybody on my team, because their ideas matter, their thoughts matter. I mean, all of those things, you know, are, I think, innate in women too, bringing that collaboration between the teams and listening and collaborating with everybody. And I love that you said gratitude. We start all our meetings with everybody going around the room saying what they're grateful for today. And, you know, sometimes it's just, it's Friday, and sometimes but it gives them a whole different mindset, right? It puts you into that mindset of gratitude that says, wow, you know, I am so grateful that I am where I am today.
100%. That's so true. And it also makes people realize that they're working with other humans, right? Whole humans, not just, you know, people who perform this specific role, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. to know on a really deep level.
Yeah. Right.
I think when you're moving really quickly and you're trying to make the, you know, impossible happen, there's going to be hurdles and challenges that are going to require everybody to come together and put in a lot of extra effort. And so when you know people at that individual level, it becomes easier to ask that and that, you know, you don't even have to ask it at a certain point, because mm-hmm. everybody wants to chip in and help out. 100%.
Sounds like you have an amazing, amazing team. So in closing, Danica, tell me, what is your favorite place that you've traveled to and why?
Oh, I love it. man, you know, actually, I spent a lot of time in Italy quite a few years back, and actually lived there for a few months and really loved both the culture there of sort of slowing things down and appreciating good food and mm-hmm. art, history of all of that. I really loved it and hope to go back soon. I haven't been back in a very long time, but just appreciating sort of the culture and the language. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think here at least in the US and what I'm caught up in now, things move very quickly and it can be easy to sort of put the blinders in and be very mission focused. And I was so blown away in Italy how, you know, you just wander around and check out art and streets and pick up a espresso, and it's very laid back but intentional. Mm-hmm. to try to incorporate some of that into life, it's critical.
Yeah, it's critical because I love Italy as well. And, you know, I mean, we ate 3-course meals every day and never gained an ounce. And I love that because we walked everywhere. We had that relaxed mindset where, like you said, you look at art, you look at beauty, you look at the architecture, and you're just like, wow, you know, your ideas start flowing, you feel better. It's amazing. I completely agree. But you have to promise you have to go back there because I think you're working too hard. Too many hours.
It's never work if you're loving it.
That's true.
Yeah, I think you did touch on something there though. That's really important. I mean, it can be so easy to just like grind it out, right? Work 12 hours, whatever it might be, to try to get that thing done. But if you're not in the right brain space to do it, it's you're like banging it your head against the wall.
Right.
A tough learning curve. And I've had to hone this over the last few years is knowing when I need to just get outside. I joke that I'm solar powered and I get a lot of energy out of just being disconnected for a bit and in nature. And so taking the opportunity to do that so you can create that brain space to then go have a good idea and go bang out all that work, I think is essential. But it's so challenging to take that first step to just shut it down for a bit when you're in need of a break.
I tell you from experience, I've been there and just when you're passionate about what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work, but you keep going and going and going and going and you need that break. And when you walk outside and you see the sunshine and you smell the roses, you get all different ideas too. So it is very important to do that. And it took me a long time to figure that out. So I'm glad you're seeing it already.
It's tough. It's never easy. It's a practice, right? It's not
That's right.
One day you wake up and you do it now, but you have to keep working at it.
That's right. Well, Danica, this was such an honor, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show. Please share with our listeners how they can get a hold of you.
Excellent. Yeah. And thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed our conversation. And so in terms of getting a hold of me, so I don't actually have any social media. So
that's okay. You don't have time for that.
I don't have any of it. So right. I do have LinkedIn. That's the only thing I do have. So you can reach out to me there. But I think that's probably the best way.
Okay, great. Well, we'll post that information in the notes, in the show notes. But again, thank you. It was such an honor and such a pleasure to learn from you. I know many women will be listening and you will help many, many women build that confidence and get to new heights in their career. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Tech in the Right Direction. Please take a minute to subscribe or follow so that you never miss an episode. Also, don't forget to like, share, and comment. Thank you. See you next week.
From IT skill enhancements to end user adoption training, Directions Training is your resource to help optimize the effectiveness of your technology investments. Over 500,000 students have taken advantage of our wide selection of technology and business training solutions, covering the most popular applications today, such as Microsoft 365, Azure, Windows 10, and more. As a podcast listener, we invite you to take advantage of an exclusive offer. Receive 30 days of free access to our Microsoft official curriculum on-demand courses for IT professionals or end users. Visit us at www.directionstraining.com/podcast to claim this offer today. Hurry, this offer is only available for a limited time. Success is a journey. Ask for directions.